Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history-telling podcast chronicling the epic story of America decade by decade. Right now, I'm digging into the history of incredible infrastructure projects of the 1930s, including the Hoover Dam, the Empire State Building, the Golden Gate Bridge, and more. The promise is in the title. History That Doesn't Suck. Available on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Kane Collects. If this is your first time, I appreciate you coming on board. You can always catch up on any old episodes that I've had. We've had a bunch of them. It's been a really good 2023. We're a month into 2024. And I'm going to bring on this is my first repeat guest. And it's because a guy I just really respect and know a ton. He knows a ton about the industry, the hobby. He's been doing it forever. The owner of Otea Sports, Jason Koontz. Jason, man, thanks. I really appreciate it, man.
Man, thanks for having me on again. I appreciate it, brother. It's good to see talk with you.
Yeah, so for people that don't know, me and Jason, we're both from Michigan. And so before we get into the hobby and all that's going on, I mean, we've gone through some ups and downs here in the last few weeks. Michigan winning the national title and then the Lions ripping our heart out and blowing a 17-point lead in the NFC Championship game. Jason, I know you like me, are incredibly passionate about our sports here, man. How are you dealing with what's happened the last couple weeks?
I don't even want to talk about it. You know, it's like I told you after the Michigan game, I felt like we were free rolling, but I really obviously still, you know, I'm like, let's go 2 for 2, you know, let's just do it. And, you know, we know what happened. It's like at halftime, all our friends are like, we're going to the Super Bowl. And of course, those people maybe haven't experienced the last 35, 40 years of like, you know, like we have of the Lions knowing, you know, we kind of knew, like deep down, we knew they were going to blow the game, and it's sick. So it's frustrating, man. It's, I don't know. I don't know.
You feel helpless because you think the inevitable is going to happen. You can't control it. You know, it's a sick feeling. You don't want to feel like that, but there's always that thing sticking in your gut until the game's over. You never count your chickens, right? I mean, until they're ahead.
It's wild because like you literally look at the game script and you're like, all right, like this and this all need to happen. And you're like, okay, like we got this, but you still deep down, you know, and then somehow this, everything happens like boom, boom, boom. And then they lose the game and you're just like, yeah, let's talk about cards, man. Let's talk about the Lions.
Sorry, man. Hey, you know what, Jason? So you get to step away from it, but you know what I do? I imagine having your heart ripped out in front of you, and then you have to talk about it for a week straight, 4 hours a day after. I mean, it's like the most painful week of my life so far, but you're right. Let's talk about cards and hobby and things that make us happy. So let's get into it, man. 2023 is over with. We're a month into 2024. Your thoughts, Jason, on what this year brings? What do you think the hobby is going to how is it going to do, the up, the down? I mean, right now, I mean, NFL Prism just came out. Everyone's CJ Stroud chasing, but we got Anthony Richardson, Bryce Young, even Will Levis, Wemby for basketball. I mean, what do you think 2024 looks like for the hobby?
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, because the two big manufacturers are kind of feuding right now. There's a bunch of stuff going on. I think a lot of people have come in and, you know, some people have taken a big hit gambling on some of these newer quarterbacks in the last year. And, you know, you kind of learn by example and learn from experience. And like, when that happens to you, like I was kind of looking at this, from the National, it's like everybody in at the National and, you know, over the summer in 2023, nobody was talking about Mahomes. It was all like Sam Howell and Ritter and all these guys. And it's like Mahomes is staring you right in the face, and everyone just wants, the problem is nobody wants a double up or a triple up anymore. Everybody wants the 30X, which is, you know, that's life. Like everybody wants to hit the lottery ticket or the slot machine. And, you know, it's hard to do that with a guy like Mahomes, but it's a lot safer bet. And it turns out, you know, that was the way to go. And, you know, I think getting burned on some of these quarterbacks is a good thing because it kind of like redirects you before you like lose everything. It allows you to like adjust yourself and like take the hit and then kind of be like, okay, like what am I going to do now to not, you know, buy a Sam Howell card for $3,000 and now it's worth $100. So I'm excited for 2024. I think everything's just kind of leveled off and you see some stuff starting to go back up, like the better stuff. So I, you know, like every other market, the good stuff eventually will rise and the dog shit will, you know, stay at that level. So that's kind of where we're at right now. It was like a 2-year roller coaster, and it feels like we're definitely like settling into, you know, a comforting area of where the hobby should be.
Yeah. I think like settling in is a good term for it. I mean, you mentioned people getting burned, like Mac Jones, you know, that's the most recent one. And that seemed like it happened very quickly. He didn't even, you know, I know you're pretty infamous for your Andrew Luck investment, but at least that guy was in the league for, you know, his trajectory was like, you know, Hall of Fame. And Mac Jones didn't even seem like he had a trajectory. It went away that quickly. So I think, do you think that prospecting is still, did that settle in at all? You know?
Well, I think the problem is there's so many people doing it now, is a lot of the upside's already built in, where like when I was doing it, you know, you could buy stuff and it could 500x. The problem now is like to buy a Mac Jones, for example, or Sam Howell, like there's already so much hype and so many people buying off of like preseason before they've ever seen him play, that the stuff's already inflated. So it's like when it, you know, what the upside is, there's still upside, but it's limited. But the downside is just massive. Like the Mac Jones 101, I think it got pulled. Some kid pulled it, sold it for 100 grand. That guy flipped it for 175,000. And, you know, that card's maybe worth like a few thousand bucks now, like just for, you know, for whatever reason. And maybe he still might end up doing something. Yeah. So at a couple thousand bucks, it's probably a good gamble, a hell of a lot better gamble than 175,000. And it's like, even at 175,000, which is so absurd, it's like the person buying that, you know, unless they're just in love with Mac Jones or
where's
a collector,
that going to go, right? Well, how much higher can it get?
Yeah, like it's not going to be $1 million car. I don't know. So, you know me, I gamble every now and then with some stuff, but I gamble enough in the real world where in cards, I try to keep it safe, you know, in football and, you know, retired players can't get hurt. They can still do stupid shit off the field, but, you know me, I'm more vintage and just safer with that. But I get it. Like I love to occasionally take shots and gamble like that. But quarterbacks, I mean, and when football, you kind of got to stick with quarterbacks. Generally receivers and running backs just, you know, never do it. And it's just like, look at all the quarterbacks this year that finished the season. I mean, that a couple, even guys like Tua had a really good season. His stuff's like way down. So yeah, you really got to just hit it right on the head to really do well on investing in one of the newer the QBs.
Yeah. I tell people all the time, like you'd like to, and I agree with you, like the price is already built in so much. Like how much more can you actually gain if he does reach his ceiling and potential? And yeah, we'll get to vintage a little bit later, cause I know you're a big vintage guy. And I lean that way too, just cause it is safer, but we look at the Super Bowl matchup right now. You got one guy who's the safe investment in Mahomes, and you got Purdy, the one who's, is this thing real or is this, you know, is this the next Tom Brady story? What's going on? Or, you know, so it's kind of classic. It's kind of funny. Like we have these two pitted against each other in sports, but in the hobby world, they're looking at these two as well.
Yeah, you know, it's, you know, like, Mahomes has already kind of made his stance. It's like, and Purdy, the cool thing about Purdy is he was such a late pick. I think he was the last pick like Brady, but, you know, he just doesn't have a lot of cool cards out there. So there, at least there's like a little bit of limited supply as far as like Purdy stuff goes. But personally, it's like, I don't know. I just don't see, he doesn't dazzle me the way. Like Mahomes, every time Mahomes, when a player does something crazy and you're not shocked, or you just let me say that differently. When he doesn't complete a play, you're like, you know, you're shocked. It's like when Mahomes or Brady or Jordan misses a shot, you're like, what the hell? He missed that. Like, that's what defines a great player to me, where, you know, like when Purdy throws the ball, it's like, you're not really, you know, it's like, he's just managing the game. The shit that Mahomes does out there just blows my mind. Like last week, I'm not sure when this is going live, so the AFC Championship. I mean, God, he made some crazy plays, and it's like, I don't know why I'm surprised anymore. He's just so freaking good. And
no, he's got an X factor, he's intangible, and he is exciting, and that might hurt. I mean, Purdy cards are still pretty expensive, but he's definitely not as dazzling or exciting as, you know, Al Mahomes is. But I think when people are so much into prospecting, I mean, they're gonna, you know how it is, they're just gonna lean that way. So speaking of,
Well, I was gonna say, and when Mahomes, well, this is gonna be Super Bowl number. Is this gonna be number three or four for him when he wins?
Three if he wins it.
Yeah, so this will be number three for him. So, I mean,
dude, six straight AFC Championship games too. I mean, he's
it's actually, if you look at the betting money, I don't know if we can talk about betting on this channel, but like everybody's pounding the Chiefs, which kind of scares me. But to me, it's like it seems like the Chiefs are gonna crush them, but. I know. I always like to fade the public, so I might actually end up betting San Francisco. Like, just out of, I don't know.
Well, for those that people that don't pay attention, like really pay attention all year long, I don't know if they know this because Mahomes is so good at what he is, and everyone loves him so much. The Chiefs have actually turned into a defensive team. They're a defensive team now. They're really good on defense, and Mahomes is just so good on offense. And as long as he has Kelce, like those two carry that offense. And then, you know, Rice has been a nice find and Pacheco and all stuff, but it's built around Mahomes and making plays when need to be. Like, it's, they didn't score a point in the second half against the Ravens, but when he needed a play to make to ice that game, Mahomes always makes it. And that's what makes them so damn good and dangerous. It's crazy, but they're a defensive team, which people don't really realize. I don't think.
Yeah, I agree. They're fun to watch.
So let's switch to basketball and the hype over there with Wemby. So generally speaking, big men in basketball, you know this, they don't get the love that like guards do and the smaller players. But Wemby, he's gotten a lot of hype. Why do you think that is? Is it because he's not a true center? Is he like more a Kevin Durant? Like, why do you, like, can Wemby carry the basketball torch?
Yeah, I think it's the uniqueness. I mean, I always call it the Shaq theory. When I never, like, you know, a lot of people invest in like Embiid, and I always tell people, like, if Shaq can't, you know, and Shaq has everything, the personality, like, just everyone loves Shaq. And like, if his stuff can't be worth, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, no center can. But kind of like you said, like, I don't think Wemby falls in the center category because no center is going to be able to miss a 3-point shot and dunk it like he did. Like, that's, and so, yeah. And he's got like, he's just, it's like Ohtani. It's the unicorn of, the NBA has never seen anything like him. You know, it's like, it's why Ohtani's Ohtani in baseball, you know, the pitching and the hitting. So I think the whole unicorn aspect of his size and shooting and, you know, he needs to put some muscle on, but I mean, he's fun to watch. He's fun to watch. It's like, it reminds me of like the tall kid in middle school playing basketball sometimes. And, you know, like the little kids are just driving the hoop and he's just blind, but these are like, you know, NBA all-stars that he's playing against. So I don't know. The guy puts the muscle on the next couple of years, he's going to be and not get hurt. Like, that's a big thing. And you're that size. That's my big thing, is like avoiding injury, you know?
So I don't know if you saw a few weeks ago when him and Chet were playing against each other, and it looked like a freak show. Like, it didn't look real. Like, these two guys guarding each other, like, and dribbling and handling and shooting threes. I'm like, what is going on? Is this real life? It looks like something from a lab that these two came out of, and they're able to play ball. It's crazy, right? It's unicorn stuff.
A video game. It's like,
yeah, it's like one of the monsters.
It's just so fun to watch. Like, I'm so busy. I got kids and I'm like work and everything. And it's like, I don't really, you know, football Sunday, I'm dialed in, but I haven't really got a chance to watch as much NBA. You know, the Pistons aren't having a great year. So it's like, I haven't really sat down and watched as much NBA as I have in like my past, you know, time. But this year, it's definitely like, you know, oh, let me check out, like, 90% of the basketball I've watched have been Spurs games. And it's because of, obviously, you know, Wemby. So that matters. He's, you know, he's obviously from France, so it's like he kind of has the international, like, you know, play. So I don't know, it's interesting. That's all. Like, it's the values are up there, and the big issue though is the battle between Panini and Fanatics, where, you know, there hasn't been, and I don't know how much the users know, but there's a license and autograph deals, you know, battling. So, you know, on one side we have him in a uniform with no autograph, and the other side we have autograph but no uniform. So, you know, we're kind of, the collector's getting screwed here, and not getting, you know, a sick top tier Wembanyama card to collect.
Yeah.
So
like a true, you know, like RPA type, you know. So yeah, which is a great point. Like, for people, yeah, that don't know, like CJ Stroud can't sign. Like, the Prism that just came out, he has no autograph card out. Like, Wembanyama has no autograph out. Like, do you think does that hurt those guys, the hobby, you know, that they don't have it? Or is it like, make it more like, hey, when they do finally get licensing and we're just waiting for that day, and that's going to make that chase card then?
I think it does. It does definitely hurts, but it also shows you how strong our hobby is. The fact that the autograph true RPAs and stuff aren't available and people are still cracking wax and buying the stuff just shows you that everyone's addicted and they all want the Wembys and the Strauss no matter what. Obviously if they had the in uniform autograph card, it'd be that much more exciting. So yeah, it's just frustrating because hopefully they figure it out. And we get to a point where we can get back to, business as usual. But yeah, they're definitely, Stroud is the same in football. He's just such an exciting rookie to watch. And, he's got, I'm not calling him Mahomes, so don't say that, but he has a little bit of that swagger that, he reminds me of a baby Mahomes. So I'll say that. So we'll see, it's a lot of upsides already built in, man. It's like,
oh my God. Yeah.
So he's talented though. I love watching both those guys, NBA and NFL.
No, it's good to have, definitely good for the hobby, for the sports to have young, exciting players. I mean, be this good this quickly. Other big news, speaking of autographs, is I wanted your thoughts on LeBron and Bronny card, that the Chase card. Like in the future, so it's nice to have LeBron autograph cards now, but he's on there with Bronny. Like, what if Bronny is a complete bust? What does that happen to that card? Does it, does it matter or does it not matter in your opinion?
Yeah, so I mean, LeBron said he's going to play until LeBron, it's like he's just assuming LeBron or Bronny's going to make it to the pros. It's like he's not an amazing player, It's like if he wasn't LeBron James's son, he wouldn't be getting this type of exposure. So, I guess it's going to be interesting to see if LeBron does continue playing until Bronny potentially gets drafted. And then, is he going to go to the Lakers or is LeBron going to go sign with some team for – NBA minimum just to play with his son. Cause that's what he said. He said, I'm going to play until, I can play 1 year with my son. Hopefully maybe he surprises us and turns out to be, the next great thing. But I mean, he's just, if you look at the draft boards and just, the rankings, he's nothing special other than being LeBron's son. So I think it's so hype driven, it's cool, but I haven't really paid attention to it just because obviously you're buying it for the LeBron and, if you get LeBron's son with him, it's just, it's just weird. I don't know. I'm wishing Bronny the luck, the best of luck, but I mean,
it's really tough though. It's not even just nothing to knock on Bronny. It's just this league. These guys are the less than 0.5%, make it and let alone be an all-star or be good. Like the all-star teams got named and Trae Young averages 27 and 10, and he's not on even a reserve. That's, So it's really hard, man. And so, like I said, it's not a knock on Bronny, but just to make the league would be pretty impressive. But then people would question, is it because of LeBron too?
Yeah, he's got great genes, but I mean, from what I've seen, I don't think he has star NBA potential, but he's got time. So yeah, exactly. We'll see.
And actually the, LeBron's other kid who's younger might be actually better. And if he wants him, he's going to have to wait even a couple more years before he gets in the league. So,
yeah, I'm a LeBron hater. So, I mean, I definitely see what he's done and I appreciate it. And I think he's, the second or third best player ever. I'm a Jordan guy. I grew up in Jordan. Nobody's going to give me an argument that's ever going to put LeBron ahead of Jordan. Even if they're right, there's no point in arguing with me because Jordan is him. I grew up on Jordan, which means I just don't give LeBron credit for probably what he deserves.
Probably not. But, I think it's not like you say he sucks. I mean, you got him in top three, so you acknowledge that he's good. He's just never going to be as good in your mind as Jordan, which, I agree. But I feel like, of course, I'm biased, but I feel like there's actual, you could back it up pretty well. I'm not just saying it just because I grew up in an era or I watch Jordan or like Jordan. I feel like there's pretty substantial information that I can put out there.
Yeah.
And it's not just stat driven. It's just,
Yeah. I mean, the Jordan LeBron argument, usually I don't get any pushback. The one that I get pushback is, I have Kobe ahead of LeBron too, but that's also an era thing that I grew up watching Kobe. And Kobe is the closest thing I've seen to Jordan. So it's like,
why wouldn't the same he be?
Thing. Yeah, I got Jordan, Kobe, LeBron. And, that's where I'm at and I'm sticking with it.
I honestly don't think there's anything wrong with that, but I may be biased too. So let's go to vintage real quick. The big news in the hobby this past week is in Saskatchewan, Canada, apparently there is a case of 1979 OPC hockey cards, which is, I think there's 24 boxes in this case. How many, Jason, do you know how many potential Wayne Gretzky rookie cards are in each box?
Yeah, it's there's no guarantee, but it's usually around one to, you know, so they're probably going to get around 20, you know, maybe a little more Gretzky's in the case. Obviously, you know, the value is in the sealed case and not, you know, or in the sealed boxes and not opening them. But it's a massive find. I mean, this is like on the same level as 86 floor basketball. This is the first known OPC hockey case. I actually know where two 86 floor cases are, three 86 floor basketball cases. And one of those, the first one surfaced a few years ago for the first time in like 20 years. So this is definitely like holy grail type stuff.
I mean, this is truly amazing. You've done, like I said, you've been around this hobby for a long time. You've witnessed, you've seen, you know, people that have sealed cases from vintage stuff. Like when you heard about this story, I mean, how floored were you? I mean, like, this is like, by the way, for people that don't know, it is up for auction right now. It's, people are estimating it's going to go over $2 million for this case. I mean, when you heard about this, Jason, were you like, what? Is this serious?
Yeah, I don't want to hype it too much because I'm actually bidding on it. But
don't worry, so, it's going to get its own.
Yeah, so the interesting thing is, you know, the case is labeled 1980. And, you know, when OPC, when they created their product, it was towards the end of the season. So obviously, you know, the season, like basketball, was 79-80. So on the outside of the case, it said 1980. And the family that owned it for the last 40 years just assumed it was a 1980 case, which is still like good money. That's, they're probably $300,000, $350,000. And at some point, someone's like, you should probably open that just to make sure. And they peeled it back and it was a white box, which in 1980, what, I don't know if people know this, 1980, it's a blue box. So they're like, holy shit, like what's going on here? So they open a little more and they realize it was 1979 OPC boxes, which, you know, you go from, you know, 300 grand to maybe 3 million or whatever, it's, you know, whatever the hell it's going to go for. But that's a pretty big upgrade in you know, fact that it's been sitting there for so long.
Why was it in a 1980 case or box?
So when OPC makes the product, they made it in the second part of the year. So the season is 1979, but it finishes in 80. So they just write 19, like a lot of other, you know, sports, I think usually write the beginning, you know, they would write 70, but OPC just, you got to remember the quality control, especially OPC, was not, nobody cared. Like the quality control was shit. So, you know, they just slapped the 1980 stamp on it and said, okay, well, like we printed this in 1980, but it's for the 79-80 season. And, you know, if I didn't know better, I would have just assumed it, you know, but you know, when they opened it up and saw the white boxes and not the blue boxes, they were definitely in awe, which is a good, you know, pretty fun find to find something that's 10x what you thought it was. So,
yeah, man. I mean, so like, is this one something where you have to keep sealed, or like you said, there could be potentially 20 to 24 Wayne Gretzky rookie cards, and a gem mint Wayne Gretzky rookie card could go for $1 million itself.
No, PSA 10 is probably 3 or 4 million. So yeah, the risk reward of cracking it though, I don't think it's worth it. I think the value and the rarity of it being sealed is just so cool. And the fact that there's not another known example. Yeah. Like if I won this, I would just keep it sealed, but, yeah, it's definitely like enticing to crack one for sure, but you can't crack one box. If you crack one box, then you know, there goes the case. But I know it was wrapped by one of the, you know, by Steve Hart, Baseball Card Exchange. They wrap each box individually, and then I think they wrap the case too. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what it goes for. But I don't want to hype it because I want to win it cheaper than what it's worth.
Well, good luck, because I hope you win it, so I don't talk to you about it after. I want to see this first. I want to take a picture with it, man. That's like cool as hell.
Yeah, if I win it, come on over.
So you're very good into vintage and all that stuff. Does bricking happen with the 1970s, 80 cards? Like, because we obviously know what happens in the 90s and stuff, but what about like 79, 80? Like, do you know?
Do people break them?
No, brick. I'm sorry. Do the cards brick and they stick and just damage, you know, like a surface issues? I know you're not ripping it or cracking it if you win it, but I mean, is that an issue? Just continue to keep it, you know, sealed.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just it's yeah, the value is so built in on the rarity of it being sealed. To open something for grading with the print quality of just centering alone and print issues, and then you're gonna probably have mint corners, but not necessarily. But assuming you do have mint corners, I mean the centering was atrocious on 1970s and even 80s. So yeah, when you start cracking that stuff for grading, it's like almost a guaranteed loss, but it's gambling. And you might find a dead centered card with no print and hit the lottery. But yeah, I think keeping it sealed is the much safer play. So
And the thing that I read about, and I think you could probably inform me more, and like the OPG, actually the edges were rigid. They weren't like sharp edges because the printing factory they came from, like it wasn't like Tops in the US. I guess the OPG ones, like they were supposed to, not supposed to be, but it wasn't perfect. Even if it was perfect, like you could still get a 10, because it was that's the way it came out of the printing factory.
Yeah, so what happened was, so basically Topps and OPG are the same company. I'm not sure if you know that. And basically when Topps was done using the sheet cutters to cut down their sheets in the factory, rather than throw them away, even though they were used and abused, they would ship them up to Canada. And then those were continued to use, that's why you have like the really awful like OPG cut is what it's called, which is because they were using sheet cutters to cut the sheets down that were should have been thrown away. So it was dragging the paper and ripping and making the OPG. So that's why it's just like they didn't really care about the product. It was just a I think because they didn't care about it, it's like everything else. Collectibles that aren't made to collect end up being worth more than stuff that is made like a collector's edition item is never goes on to be worth value, where stuff that nobody thinks it's going to be worth money, everyone just tosses it and doesn't respect it, is the one that ends up being having the value. And OPG totally trumps Tops. I mean, it's like I don't know what the multiplier is, but I would much rather have OPG than Tops nowadays.
So when you've gone to, buy collections and things like that, what are some of the crazy ones that stand out in your mind where you're like, oh my God, this guy has this in his attic, or this guy, he had this in the crawl space for this many years. Anything stand out for you that you remember that you just couldn't believe you saw or found, like Jackie Robinson or
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history-telling podcast chronicling the epic story of America, decade by decade. Right now, I'm digging into the history of incredible infrastructure projects of the 1930s, including the Hoover Dam, the Empire State Building, the Golden Gate Bridge, and more. The promise is in the title, History That Doesn't Suck. Available on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
A Babe Ruth or a mantle or something.
I mean, one of my favorite stories is we got a call. This is maybe like probably 17, 18 years ago now. And the guy tells us on the phone that he has, I have like 36 mint Wilt Chamberlains. I have 36 mint Bob Cousy, like, but and I didn't really think about it at the time. And he told me what he was asking for the stuff. So it was just outside Philadelphia. So we flew in then probably, I think the next day. And I remember walking in, and he had seven unopened 61 Fleur basketball boxes. And he never mentioned on the phone, which is hilarious because obviously nowadays you would. He was literally just doing the math of like there's 66 cards in the set and how many cards you get per box. And I just think it's comical that he never thought to mention that he was he that the they were seven sealed boxes and packs. And so it's kind of like blown away. Like I was like, what's this? So so I end up buying the 761 Fleer basketball boxes, and I wish I would have held on. I mean, we at the time I think we paid, I think it was 90,000 for six boxes, and end up selling them for like 35,000 a box, and now that's probably like a 400,000 or 500,000 dollar box. I mean,
But at the
sorry,
time,
I should.
I mean, you make, your profit and you move on to the next, huh?
Yeah, I never. I mean, but I'm obviously kicking myself. I don't know why. I'm kind of
Didn't
a
keep
collector,
one.
more. Yeah, I don't know why I didn't keep one. It's just like it's not in my nature to not. And so that's something I kind of always just because it's, and it was weird too. The guy's father had worked for for Fleer, and that's just, and I was all excited because I assumed the guy had a bunch more stuff, and that was all he had left, and that was a pretty wild one.
Where's the farthest you've gone for a collection? Like, did you have you gone to Canada and bought a collection? I know Michigan's not too far from Canada in general, but just, you know, another country or just cross country only.
Yeah, I've been to Canada a bunch. Canada actually has the best show in, I don't want to say the country, the best show in North America was in Toronto. And for 20 years, nobody really knew about it. So we would go up there and, because they didn't really grade. It was such a pain in the ass to send stuff to PSA. They have PSA Canada and stuff now. But it was always just a hassle to grade. So we would go up there and we would find just fresh mint, you know, been Ohaki, Opeachy, but other sports, they would generally sell it to us fairly cheap because it's a hockey, you know, country. So I think it's funny now because there's these younger guys, and I stopped going to the show a few years ago just because as it's become more popular, just the less deals and less you know, but we took advantage of it for 20 some years. And some of these younger guys now are like, hey, you should really come up to this Toronto show. I think you'd enjoy it. I was like, trust me, I've been going to the Toronto show since, you know, 1997. You know, it's a different world now with how that's evolved, and it's kind of cool to see in another country a show take off like that has. But that was always like my just hidden gem, didn't want to tell anybody. A few people knew about it. We would go up there and just we would spend so much money at that show because just mint product everywhere for years. So yeah, Toronto, Canada all the time.
I've heard about it and I've never gone. I want to go, but like when you started going till now, I mean, how much was it all hockey then and now to now, like there's more basketball and football. I mean, is it transforming a lot or is it still like a lot of hockey?
It's still a lot of hockey. It's still hockey dominated, but I mean, it was weird, man. Like I'm telling 20 years ago, it was like baseball was like kryptonite to them. So it was just like dumping their baseball and, you know, they were always maybe priced a little high, but the American dollar back then was, you know, almost 2-1. So that worked in our favor. And the fact that, you know, when you're buying mint cards to grade, it doesn't really matter what you pay. Like if you pay retail or retail plus 20%, you know, if it's a card that's going to 9 or 10 and you're going to 50 extra money, it's irrelevant whether you pay retail or not. So the pricing never really mattered up there. And generally, you got deals anyways because of the exchange rate.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's nowadays, you know how it is with freaking social media and YouTube. There's like good luck hidden gem. I mean, you really got to like find a flea market or something. You know what I mean? Where just someone hasn't been yet or anything, because even the small shows are getting, you know, they're getting advertised and people are hitting them all up. And, you know, before you get there, it's the best stuff's already gone or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a lot harder than me. Yeah, I'm lucky I entered the hobby in the era that I did. And I think, you know, obviously I worked my ass off, but like the luck factor of being in the beginning of as it started to evolve definitely matters. Like coming into the hobby now, there's a lot of cutthroat people out there. You know, it's a difficult, it's not like it was. And that's why I kind of just happy just collecting and just chilling. I keep busy doing a lot of stuff, but nowhere near what I was doing for a long time. And you know, I see it just there's so much you know, competition is the word I'm looking for. Just, you know, all these shows, it's just a different world. So you know, praise to a lot of these guys out there grinding, because it's not as easy as it was you know, even 5 years ago. But going back 20 years ago, it was easy. It was easy, I'll say. And
but yeah, I think you were like ahead of the game, though. I mean, it's that, you know, you saw something, and you know, like it's, I don't think you saw the pandemic coming, but you saw like there was, you know, this was a good business. You could make money in it. So
yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, it's just yeah, it was way ahead of the game for sure. And you know, just seeing like guys on social media like cracking cards out now and stuff. You know, thousands of people doing it. You know, there was five of us doing it 20 years ago. Like it's just. Nobody ever thought to crack out a card and try it again. It was just like, so yeah, different world now, man. Different world for sure.
Well, Jason, owner of Otia Sports, man, I appreciate the time as always. Appreciate the stories, the knowledge, and all that stuff. Follow him on, he's on all socials and things like that. Jason, yeah, and follow me on socials at Kane Collects on Twitter, Instagram, doing YouTube a little bit. And if you miss anything, you can always go back and listen and download. Like I said, Jason, when you win the auction for the case, man, we'll have you back on, and I'm gonna take a picture with it and post it on all the websites.
Sounds good, man. We gotta get together soon anyway, so hopefully maybe awesome. That'll be it.
All right, guys, thanks for listening, man. As always, keep collecting.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history-telling podcast chronicling the epic story of America decade by decade. Right now, I'm digging into the history of incredible infrastructure projects of the 1930s, including the Hoover Dam, the Empire State Building, the Golden Gate Bridge, and more. The promise is in the title. History That Doesn't Suck. Available on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.